Hello, this is Sean Kennedy, the Interim Editor-in-Chief of the American Journal of Nursing, and I'm here on the phone, not in person, but here on the phone with Kathy Baldrige and Frank Andrasik, who are the authors, co-authors of an article in our December issue, and the article is on assessing pain in people with intellectual or developmental disabilities. So Kathy and Frank, welcome to you both. Thank you for taking the time to be with me.
And thank you, Sean.
So the article is a great article, and Kathy, could you just do a little setup? Tell us about the patients in the facility where you implemented this program, the pain management program?
Yes, ma'am. There, at the time the program was started, there were a little over 800 individuals living in this facility. It's a long-term care facility, and there's individuals there ranging from mild to very profound mental retardation and intellectual disabilities. And it was recognized that a pain management program was needed because it was felt that there were individuals there that were experiencing pain from medical conditions that was not being appropriately recognized and treated. Because often in that population, just the smallest change in what their normal behavior was could indicate something very serious. So it was very difficult to pinpoint behaviors. You just had to know what their normal behaviors were, because their normal behavior may be that they were very excited all of the time and maybe even engaging in self-injurious behaviors at times, and sometimes they weren't doing that. They would stop, which would be a significant change for them. And so if there had not been any changes in medications that would warrant that, then you needed to dig deeper. And sometimes there were some acute illnesses there that were causing pain for this person.
So it wasn't so much a particular behavior as more as a pattern?
Correct.
I see.
And I think that this is where Kathy and I made a very good team, because she clearly understands the medical conditions and medical problems much better than I do. And as a psychologist, of course, one of my areas of expertise and training is trying to see if the behavior is serving some function, like self-stimulation or mm-hmm. to get attention from the environment and things like that. And so really what we needed to do was clearly work together in isolating the pain problem.
Absolutely.
Right. That I was intrigued by that aspect of it, is that if somebody started doing the self-injurious behaviors who hadn't been doing them before, mm-hmm. that there were these other factors that had to be ruled out. And I gather that was the difficult part of kind of doing the detective work of what was causing the behaviors in people who couldn't report what they were doing.
Right. And it did require a collaborative effort amongst all of the team members, and we had very specific assessments that were for the psychologist to complete to determine if that behavior was indicative of some other, like, attention-seeking behavior. And so they would bring theirs in. Physical therapy may be called in to do an assessment. And, of course, the staff members who were very familiar with these folks, some of them had worked with them for 20-something years, so they were like family. And so they knew them well, and we would have them do an assessment, a caregiver assessment. And one person would take all of that information and draw from it, and then, of course, I would do pain observations myself and bring it all together. So it wasn't just one person's effort. It mm-hmm. was a collaborative effort.
And then Sean, I don't know if we really made much of this in the paper, but another point that impressed me in our working together is once we did discover that it was an underlying medical condition or a pain problem, and I'll give one example being cancer, and we know, of course, that there's a lot of pain that can be associated with cancer. Even though we would identify that in some of the patients that we work with, there was a reluctance with people to a reluctance on the part of some of the caregivers to actually advocate for medication or to have proper dosing for the problem, which as a psychologist was an interesting situation for me to be in.
Right.
Now, to be advocating for more pain meds.
Now, what was the fear of the pain medication among the staff?
I think sometimes it was still not necessarily the pain medication itself. Some of them just weren't convinced that it was pain, even though the person had a diagnosis of metastatic bone cancer. They just weren't convinced that this wasn't just her behavior, that it truly was pain. And when he says staff, sometimes it may have been just direct support staff. It may be nursing staff, and sometimes the physicians, because they were the ordering. The order had to come from them. And so sometimes it required continuous documentation of this person's behavior and what was different, and just doing pain assessments, which with a person that was nonverbal, you know, because that's the standard, that's what everyone goes by, is what the person says, but the person wasn't able to say that, so someone had to be their voice. And so sometimes it required persistence on the team's part in documenting to get appropriate intervention for that person.
Now, you mentioned in the article that the scale that was used most often at this facility was the FLAC scale?
That's correct.
Could you describe that a little bit?
It looks at facial expressions, which is the F. L is legs, and it looks at different positions, whether it's tense or if they're drawn up to the belly. It gives descriptive factors regarding that.
And then I see cry and consolability.
Right, cry and consolability, and the A. The A is not coming to me.
Oh, activity.
Activity, thank you. And so what we would have the team do, because, again, we wanted a team effort, which included psychologists, physical therapists, nursing staff, and direct support staff, we wanted them to go through the zeros, and for each of those levels, the F, L, A, C, C, put what the person normally looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And then descriptive factors for the one column, and then descriptive factors for the two column, the one being middle of the road and the two being the pain, mm-hmm. what that person looked like in pain.
So this was done, the FLAC scale was done by the team, or could that be done by perhaps staff at the bedside?
Well, what we wanted the FLAC scale to be individualized for each person, and so that had to be a team effort.
Mm-hmm.
Then once the tool was established for that person, then anyone could take the descriptive factors and stand at the bedside and score them.
I see. So it was the team kind of set the baseline.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, Sean, the reason we like that scale is that I guess you would call it sort of a semi-structured scale. It has some categories and some general definitions, but it realizes that they can't fit everyone, especially with the group we were working with.
Right.
And so it allows for a lot of individualization. And Kathy and I never did that just by ourselves. We would always have, we would staff the patients, and we would always have a pain team,
mm-hmm.
and we would bring various representatives from the staff and the unit to come. And so we always developed that as a collaborative effort and tried our best to make sure that everybody understood and everybody agreed with that individualized definition for that person.
Right.
And it sounded like, from what you're saying about the beginning and some of the staff's concerns about pain medication, that there was almost a culture change that had to take place in the sense of getting people to agree that, similar to what you just said, Kathy, about normally when someone says they have pain, the standard is you accept them,
correct.
Their statement. So in this sense, it's when a patient displays behavior that could be pain, you accept it as pain. Is that kind of the culture? If there was no other mitigating factors, then you would accept it as pain and treat it as pain and then see, and then evaluate whether there was an effect. Is that, am I interpreting what happened correctly?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were hoping would happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And over how long a process was this? I'm sure listeners will say, gee, that sounds good. I wonder how long it took them.
Well, I was brought in because I'm certified in pain management through the American Academy of Pain Management also, and was brought in 2001 to start the program. And that was from scratch, no policies and procedures or, you know, anything. So, and I just left there this past year and still a work in progress.
Sure, sure.
And I think what Kathy did was really remarkable. I was able to come in a few years later, but I was on a very limited contract, so I would only make two or three trips there a year, and we would just staff cases the whole time that I was there. But Kathy was the one who did all the heavy lifting in between and got the cases ready for when I came in. So she clearly was the driving force behind the program.
Mm-hmm. So it certainly sounds, I should tell the readers in the article, we do have a sidebar on the facility's approach to pain, exactly what we just spoke about. And it certainly speaks well of the facility's administration to recognize the need to get this program going.
Mm-hmm.
Just as we're getting ready to close, what's the one thing you hope nurses will take away from this article?
From a nursing standpoint, being a nurse myself, and prior to going to this facility, I worked in an acute care facility on a med-surg unit, and we took care of people from this facility that were admitted with cholecystectomies and various other acute illnesses that they were experiencing pain, and they did not get treated appropriately for their pain, and that was just very disheartening to me. And I wonder how many are out there today that their pain is not recognized and that they are suffering needlessly because we don't recognize their pain. So what I would like to come out of this is that nurses have a heightened awareness that these folks do experience pain and that we need to be their advocates, and we need to be able to recognize however they communicate their pain. We need to be able to recognize that so that interventions are implemented to help them be comfortable and have a good quality of life.
And I would just echo what Kathy said, and I wanted to pick up on the advocate theme, because there oftentimes aren't people advocating for attention to pain and making sure that it's assessed properly and treated properly. And I would agree with Kathy that I think nurses are probably in a prime position to be that advocate.
Right. Well, thank you both very much for your time. And I do hope the readers, after listening to the podcast interview, will now go and carefully read your article and perhaps take it back to their units and share it with their colleagues. If they read it first, we will be tweeting and probably do a blog post on the article. So we hope to get some more attention to the article. I think it's a very good article, and I would urge all of our listeners to read it. So thank you, Kathy and Frank, very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Sean, for all your help along the way.
Sure.